Irreverent, entertaining, cool. Listen to Lit Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer's Block. And that little piece of music you heard was a gift from a good friend of mine, Mr. Rick Gilman. And I want to say again, thank you, Rick. You've done wonders for the opening of the show. And I keep the music coming because it's not only free, but it's also copywritten. Yay. Okay. I am your host, Jim Christine. I'm looking at four faces that were absolutely made for the radio. And we have Bobby Jean Bell in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hi, Bobby.
Hi, yes, a voice of radio.
That's right. And Richard Polinelli down there in the lower right-hand corner. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Jim. Good to be back.
We are glad to have you back, brother.
Really missed you.
I missed my...
Well, American Southwest and the South Central Plain states, because I have covered them the last 6 weeks.
Yes, you have. You did two emergency trips to California and back.
Yeah.
From Colorado, no less.
Yeah, good times.
Good times. Okay. Okay. Well, we're going to get right into it. Right now, we're going to open with our new format and feature, the Writer's Corner. Anybody who wants to call in and ask a question of a writer, or does a writer here have a question to ask? And we can round robin or anybody just throw a question out. Go ahead, Bobby. Do you have one, or Jennifer?
I have one. Jennifer, I was, preparing for tonight, and I read some interesting comments that you had on how important the query letter is. And we have talked about the query letter off and on over the years. I've been on this show in a while, and I thought maybe you could, all of you maybe could chime in and talk about the power of the query letter. We'll start with Jennifer.
I actually had so many interesting experiences with query letter because I don't think people, like writers, genuinely understand how important they are when they first start out and can make some mistakes, and you only get really one chance to pitch an agent, and you really want to make sure you have that letter just exactly right. And I ended up going on this site called The Query Shark, and she will critique various letters and explain to you what's wrong with them and why you should never make these mistakes. And I ended up having I wrote one that was really offbeat and different, and she ended up picking mine, which was the best thing that ever happened to me because I got my letter completely critiqued and was able to fine tune it. But my best advice to people critiquing agents is to really only pitch five at a time. And if you get five rejections, rewrite your letter, rewrite your first few paragraphs, and then pitch five more. Don't just throw the baby out with the bathwater and pitch 100 agents, because that'll be your only chance. So.
And copy edit your query letter numerous times. Because I had one where I was emailing agents years ago. And I actually did the five at a time, like, thank God in my case, because I had a bad typo in mine. And I just cut and paste, send them off. And I'm looking at the thing and went, I'm an idiot. Because they're all going to reject it just on that glaring error right there in the very first sentence. So, times you're going to get rejected just because you've got a screw up there that you didn't catch.
Right. Right. No, not only that, but you don't want to write a query letter longer than about a page. It's like getting a resume. When I was in business, getting a resume that's like 5 pages long, if I got one, I would just put it in the trash. I didn't even go through it, because obviously probably half of it's BS and the other half are lies. So, you know,
get to know the agent, what books they're they're actually representing, what authors, and make sure it's similar. And explain why you think you're a good fit. Because you have to sell not just yourself, but your writing. And I think also definitely have comps for your book that are within the last 3 years.
Right, right. And while we're on a query letter, let's get to the position base. Most publishers don't want more than a chapter or two. They want them on 8.5 by 11. Times New Roman and 12-point font and double-spaced.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for ease of reading and ease of editing and ease of going through the document without having to squint, you know, or put on reading glasses. You know, so it makes it easier for them to go through your document. And if you send more than a couple chapters, they're not going to read it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
If their interest is not piqued after a chapter and a half or two chapters, it's not going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have the best query letter in the world, but if you got crappy chapters, nice talking to you.
Yeah, and also follow exactly the directions they say, and they will specifically say we want the first 3 pages or the first chapter. I mean, they are not messing around. Like, if you don't follow the directions, they're going to get thrown in the trash. So
right. Yeah. Well, Tuscany Bay, we're a little different. We'll take the whole document. Now, I may only get through a couple chapters.
Yeah.
And Richard, too. Richard actually turns down more than I do.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. Huh?
Yeah, make me out to be the bad guy. Sure. Okay.
It's not the bad thing. But you know, I get the mysteries and stuff, and you get the heavy-duty science fiction stuff.
Yeah, and I can say one thing for people who submit to us, just save myself the aggravation, a little humility goes a long way.
Oh yeah.
If you come at me with I'm the greatest thing that God ever created and I've never heard of you, we're already off on the wrong foot, because you need to, you know, yeah, you want to pitch your work, you want to pitch yourself, but you can go way too far. And right. I had one that was like, I'm not even going to look at your manuscript. Talk to this. Bobby threw a hand up. Yeah.
Are these sent in the mail, or is it sent electronically? Electronically, or how do you submit?
You can submit by mail. You can submit by electronics. You can submit by anyway.
In my experience, there's really, I think, only one or two agencies in New York that accept snail mail. So everybody else is all electronic.
And yeah, they want email. Most everybody.
Mostly now email. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, it's faster. It's easier. It's, you know, free.
I know when I was querying back in 2014, there was one or two that did snail mail only and wouldn't do email. And I'm like, I'm not going to wait 6 months. I'm going to go ahead and go with the email people. And if I don't get anything from them, I'll backtrack to you guys. But yeah, I think most publishers, most agents, they've discovered the computer.
That's great. Like query tracker that helps you keep track of your who you've queried.
Right.
How long ago was it? Whether or not what their time frame is for a response, whether or not you get a response.
Right. And another good idea is just do a little homework on the agents you're sending this to. Don't just cherry pick. If you haven't done any homework on them, you may find yourself dealing with an agent who's, they may accept your stuff, but they're probably not going to be a top drawer. Richard.
Yeah, and have a really good elevator pitch. So the 3-minute elevator pitch, your 3 lines that are very compelling about what your story is about, and it's got to be very compelling. So
yeah, so the query letter, the synopsis, and the submission of the document, those are the things you got to do. Website, we have all of that. You know, it's we have all of it right there, so all you have to do is just fill it out and send it in.
Mm-hmm.
We make it easy.
Truth told, then write a synopsis.
Oh my God, isn't that the truth? I never know what to say. It's like, oh my God, what is the synopsis? I mean, I wrote this book. What is the synopsis of it? I don't know. There's too much going on. And it's all germane, you know?
Yeah, you don't know how much you should put in or how much you should keep out. Do you want to tease them a little? Do you want to explain everything? You know, it's just, and I don't think there's a hard and fast rule, or at least I haven't seen it, on how to write a synopsis. Have you, Jen?
Yeah, I mean, the synopsis is basically you tell what happens in the beginning, the middle, and the end.
Right.
That's not a book summary. A synopsis, they want that you have to do all the spoilers. And it's just, it needs to be literally one page or two, no more than two pages. So you got to keep it very concise, yet tell exactly what's going to happen in the story. So it's really hard to write.
Yeah, shrink your 400-page book down to a page.
Imagine how War and Peace went on a synopsis.
Oh, good God.
I mean, 1,100 pages? It's giant. So how do you take 1,100 pages and steam it down to a page and a half?
Well, just the size of the letters of the names, you know.
Exactly. Well, we're going to get into the show. We have with us tonight a young lady who is honored Audrey Schenkleiter, entitled Address to Color of the Sky. Her second book is a continuation of Prudence and or Prue as her friends call her. And this book's entitled Address to Color of the Moon. Which I'm assuming is going to be yellowish, I'm just going to let her explain her own self to you. Please welcome to the writer's block for her very first visit, Miss Jennifer Irwin. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, hey,
we're honored to be here.
We've been all on Twitter waiting for you, so you know, especially. Richard has a list of things he wants to ask you.
After
the book section.
Yeah.
Then we're going to get into Richard's questions.
Are you guys going to pick me up as a publisher? Because I'm ready.
What about the class?
So, okay.
My third book's almost ready.
We have to look at it. Sure. You have to take out some sex, I'm sure.
There's really no. I've just finished my third manuscript. It's totally separate from this one.
Oh, okay.
No connection at all.
Okay. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what, before we go into our first break, about what Address to Color of the Moon is all about?
Address to Color of the Moon is a standalone sequel that picks up when my protagonist checks out of rehab at the very end of the first book. She's gone through her 5 weeks of treatment and a lot has happened, a lot of personal growth, and she hasn't yet decided whether or not she's going to leave her husband. She has a lot of relationships to mend. She has a set of tools. She's ready to clean up the trail of destruction she left behind in Los Angeles. And all my readers were wanting to know how she's going to fare in the world and really genuinely care about her. And so this book right here, Address to Color of the Moon, picks up right as she's getting off the plane and has to face her life and reality and all the temptations. She is a sex addict, so there's a lot of temptations out there. I bring many of the cast of characters, sort of like The Big Chill. There's a funeral. Somebody does commit suicide in book one, and they all unite at the end of the book, in book two, for a funeral. And I bring a few of the characters back, some who she's met in rehab, some who were her therapist, and basically some of their wheels come off the bus. So it's a lot of addiction recovery and the realities of that.
Okay. Well, why don't we just go ahead and break down, and then we'll go a little bit into your book. This little section of the Writer's Corner has been brought to you by Tuscany Bay Books. So we'll be right back with you right after this small word from Tuscany Bay Books.
You say you've written the end on a book that makes Rowling's look like Jack and Jill went up the hill, that makes Tolkien's look like a trip to the store, and finishes a series better than George R.R. Martin? But you don't know how to get your book into the hands of readers?
though?
Well, look, before you throw that manuscript in the trash and set warp 10 for get me the hell out of here, go to TuscanyBayBooks.com, click on the submissions tab, tell us all about your book, and we'll get back in touch with you and we'll help you get that thing formatted, edited, get a great book cover for it, get it out there so that people can read it, and let you know how to market it too, so that you can do the most important right here. Go there today.
Go there today. You can't go wrong.
Definitely. You have to. Yeah. And I would like to know how I could have the microphone that far away when I was recording that and still hit it.
I haven't the foggiest clue. It's because you're like me, Rich. You're Italian and you have a big voice.
I got to hit something. I don't know. Okay.
Anyway, we format and edit. We do all kinds of stuff. In fact, we're right in the middle of a couple, two or three manuscripts right now. So, plus we have this wonderful radio show we're doing every week on LA Talk Radio. Okay. If you want to call and talk to our guest tonight, Ms. Jennifer Irwin, the number in the studio is 323-203-0815. You can call and talk to Jennifer directly. And if you don't want to, that's okay. I'm here. Bobby's here. Richard's here. And if you want to talk to us, call and talk to Sam. We don't care. Just call. Okay. Do you have a question?
There is a reference a couple of times in the book to a old kind of legend, I guess I'll call it donkey skin. Is that the right way to say it? That's the way it looks, donkey skin. It's very interesting, and it seems to be an important piece in this book and perhaps in the first one as well. Do you want to just take a moment and talk about that?
Mm-hmm. It's a fairy tale from the 1500s, and there have actually been a few movies made on it. The basic gist of these books are how your past shapes and molds who you are, the type of love that you seek, how you feel about yourself, how you visualize relationships, love, those kinds of things. And the fairy tale actually refers to a dress the color of the sky and a dress the color of the moon. That's in the fairy tale. And it correlates with the story in that in the fairy tale donkey skin, a king's, basically the queen is dying, and on her deathbed, she tells her husband, the king, you cannot marry anyone fairer than me, unless she's fairer than me. So he decides in his madness, his daughter, the princess, is the fairest one of all. And of course, she doesn't want to marry her dad. And she goes to a fairy and says, what should I do? My father's insane and he wants to marry me. And so the fairy says, have him make a dress the color of the sky. He'll never be able to do that. And then you'll be free. So of course, he does all these things, the sky, the sun, the moon, he makes all the dresses, and it's time for her to marry her father, and she escapes wrapped in a donkey skin, which is sort of her protective shield of escape. And I refer to the donkey skin as the way that we want people to see us, that we were hurting, we may be struggling, we may have addiction issues, or a parent with addiction, or a friend, or survived serious trauma, and we don't really know what people's stories are. And I really like to get to it deep. I write character-driven stories, and I like to get into the characters. And so Prudence has had a traumatic childhood, and I felt the fairy tale correlated with that and had a nice match.
I noticed in this book, I didn't read the first one, but I did notice that the rehab center that she was in, it was kind of like had an open door policy. You know, people, it was like people floated in and out of there all the time. It was like, wow. open the door and everybody goes, hi, you back?
I actually did a lot of research to make a very realistic therapeutic milieu, a lot. So the rehab center is based on the Meadows, which is in Wickenburg, Arizona, which does treat sex addiction. Pia Melody is pretty brilliant and has written a lot of books like Facing Codependence and whatnot. And in the first book, you really get an idea of what it happens in rehab, when she checks in, how they search her belongings, what kind of things she has to promise she's not going to do, you know, peeing in a cup, blood, you know, all those kinds of things. So it's actually you can leave on your own free will, but it's not recommended that you can sleep. But there is something called Family Week. So during Family Week, that's when people visit, and there are, you can actually leave to go for dinner if you are following to go to dinner. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it's adult, so you're there on your own free will. I mean, although some are there for on court order, but you are there on your own free will. So
now, how many characters in this book? And I'm not going to, other than Mike, who I really liked as a character, he's a great guy. I used to, a lot like the therapist years ago. I mean, the guy was like totally understanding, totally just calm all the time. You know, and I often wondered if my therapist, well, actually, mine, I used to wonder if he took drugs.
Stay so calm.
But how many of your characters that you write about, and Lily and some actual people that you really know?
Well, I can honestly tell you the first book was very loosely based on my life, and a lot of the childhood I used as a kind of a parameter for the story, as well as the marriage. And I wrote that book to heal from my childhood and my experiences in my marriage. But interestingly enough, as I wrote the sequel, I made everything up, and I'm still getting messages. What is real and how much is this is real? And it's been really fun for me because although the first book was loosely based on my life, this book was completely made up. And I think what I do is I take combinations of people that I admire and people, maybe the qualities that I find interesting, and I push them together into a character. I definitely, and I would say that Mike is sort of, to me, the father figure I never had. And he's the one person that doesn't sexualize Prue, which she really needs someone to trust, someone who is going to see her as a human and not as a sex object or sexual, right, you know, person, just as a person. And the one thing my agent told me was that she could, like, absolutely could not have any relation with him in this book. And I did plant the seeds that they may fall in love, but I couldn't have it happen during this book. And she did kiss Alistair in rehab in book one. So, of course, Alistair's your dream guy. He's rich. He's really good looking. Has a British accent. You know, he dresses like insane. He's thinking of everything. And, you know, no, I don't want to do a spoiler, but he goes, my name's pretty. And I, my dad was a coke addict. It's very easy for me to write those scenes. I mean, it's just, I saw it all the time. So it was, you know, it's interesting because a bit of it, you know, writing these things can be a bit triggering, you know, because you bring back memories of your own life and things are possible. But at the same time, it's good to, I mean, a line I use in my book that's straight out of recovery is, the secrets make you sick. So it's really good to just kind of get it all out. And it's been very healing, and it's been extremely gratifying. The readers that have reached out to me to say how these books have changed their life and really helped them as well. So that's been very rewarding.
Oh, okay. I noticed, and Richard, I'll jump in here too. From my YouTube, that most writers tend to, when they create characters that are a combination of people that they know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't have to work that hard.
Yeah, I absolutely love the line. This book is entirely true, except for the parts that are entirely made.
Okay. So everything in this book is true, except for the parts that are a lie.
Right.
Have you had when you've killed off a character? Mm-hmm. Have you found yourself struggling with, is this the right decision to make? Is it, should I kill him off or kill her off or not?
No,
I know which one I'm talking about.
Yeah. I had a character commit suicide in the first book. And I remember one night I was telling, I have three sons and they kind of went through the process with me of learning how to find time off, Glory. I just need tragic to happen. And they were like, what? No.
What? She's sweet.
Her. She's so sweet.
Yeah, she's a sweet, she's a neat character. Yeah.
And the thing is that she's so broken. She's just so broken. And I really, you know, I just want people to know that they're not alone and there is help. And there, you know, a lot of us have endured traumatic experiences and you can move forward and find self-love and heal. And so that's kind of this, I hope, the message that comes across in these books.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of times sexual addiction also comes with body dysmorphia. It's psychology is far from my expertise, but I do read occasionally. Every week, but
I was gonna say occasionally.
But I mean, there's a reason that they're looking for that self fulfillment because they're very unhappy with themselves and their vision of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And I personally have struggled with body dysmorphia, and I taught Pilates for many, many years. And I saw women one day, they look in the mirror and they're feeling really great. And they think their butt looks really good. And they're like, I'm having a good day. And then the next time I see them, or I would see them, they would be very down on themselves and beating themselves up and saying that they were fat or eating too much. Or,
yeah. You know,
women are incredibly hard on themselves. And for a man, I've been amazed at how many men have written reviews on my books because it wasn't the target audience, but I think men enjoy getting in a woman's head. I mean, if you women, the amount of thoughts going on in our heads at any given moment are just insane, are very common. And yes, a lot of sex addicts do have that issue where they have self-esteem issues and they also have issues with their bodies, associating their bodies with love and intimacy, as well as the broken mirror, so to speak, of seeing the outside world may seem something different than them, what they see when they look in the mirror.
Yeah, it's like, well, I mean, you have three boys.
Mm-hmm.
Their eyes must have been open somewhat reading the first book, especially if they knew it was somewhat of their mother's history, as it were.
Yeah, I've been pretty honest with my boys about my childhood experiences. And they were obviously very aware that my ex-husband is an alcoholic and that I am the child of an alcoholic. So of course, I married him. That's what you do when you're codependent. And, you know, I really made the protagonist a sex addict because at the time, 50 Shades of Grey had come out. My Pilates studio was just lit. It was on fire. I mean, women were just going insane. And I was just fascinated by that. I was really fascinated by how that book just exponentially exploded people's, like, it just got people having sex again in marriage. It was just insane. And so I think that sort of springboarded that I made this character be a sex addict. And I thought that was kind of cool because when a guy has a lot of sex, he's a stud. And when a woman does, she's a slut. There's just all these stereotypes. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to have this character that just sees sex in a very different way than a typical woman. So, and it was really fun to kind of create her. And people love Prue. She's very poorly behaved. She's very, you know, she makes a lot of mistakes. But my readers love her and they root for her. They really do.
Well, she's a really interesting gal, though, too. You know, she's a top interior designer. She, in many ways, she's really got her act together. I really like the relationship she has with her son and how they navigate through some dicey things better than I think some moms probably do. So I found her to be really well-rounded and very interesting. She didn't always act the way, or she wouldn't always respond the way that I might have imagined. So she was kind of surprising me throughout the book. Yeah.
Thank you for that. That means a lot. I love hearing that.
Yeah, we're going to go ahead and take our second break. When we come back, we'll have a couple more minutes on the book, and then we're going to get into process. And Richard is chomping. I can see him. he's going to pounce on you, Jennifer. Be ready. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer's Block. And we'll be right back with you after this brief message from LA Talk Radio. If you have never listened to LA Talk Radio, then you need to treat yourself to one of the best online live radio stations around. If you have listened to talk radio and, let's be honest, found yourself saying, I can do that better, well then, LA Talk Radio wants you. See, we have 50-minute slots available all day, Saturdays and Sundays included, and we're looking to fill those slots with high-quality broadcasts from talk hosts that are in the know. If you think you have what it takes, go to www.latalkradio.com and click the link that says host. Then just joining the legion of radio folks that got their start right here at LA Talk Radio. That's www.latalkradio.com. You have something to say. Now let's hear it. LA Talk Radio. And we are back with our guest, Jennifer Irwin, and of course, Richard and Bobby Jean. And Bobby Jean's got her camera out. Oh, no.
Remember when we took a lot of pictures always in that LA Talk studio? We don't do that anymore. I was
taking pictures, so I guess she was.
Yeah. You inspired me, Jennifer.
I'm all about
it. 6:32 in California, and I can't quiet this crowd down. They're just like, they've gone off the rails.
They're having a party over here.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, if you want to call and talk to Jennifer, the number here is 323-203-0815. And I just remember, LA Talk Radio is a live radio station. Anything can happen, and off time does, and it just did. It more than likely will continue throughout the evening, so we'll just let it go at that. Anyone else have any more questions on the book before we move on to process? Bobby Jean, nothing?
I do. Well, this might be process too, though. It was interesting to me that that we get Prue in the first person, and then all of the other people we have in third person, and we go also forward and back. Or we go back, and then we go present.
Right.
And that may be really a process question, and maybe Richard's been sitting on that one to ask about. So
you're good. Go ahead.
Oh, I know what Richard's going to ask, and I'm waiting for this question to come up.
So I wondered, I guess, what your why did you decide to do it that way? And then when you were writing the past and the current, the present, did you write like all the present and then all the past, and then weave them?
My agent, the first time when I sent him the first draft, he said, you've literally taken the most complex story structure imaginable. And he felt like I did a really great job with it. But so the first book does go back and forth in time. And I decided to follow that format, but I don't go from first person to third person in the first book. I wanted to get people were very curious about the other characters and wanted to know their backstories and wanted to know how they had ended up where they were. So I got, especially Mike, people wanted to know more about Mike, what was his story, and Lily, people are huge fans of Lily. So, and I'm fascinated by female friendships and how joyful they can be and how painful they can be. And I absolutely had to make this friendship and go deeper with it and go deeper with who's and her bad behavior. And I mean, my God, she kisses Lily's husband. And Lily doesn't give her. And I reveal why Lily feels so loyal to Prue in the book. And, and it's a pretty serious situation. It's very, interesting experience. But that's why I did it that way. I did follow the format of back and forth in time. For the readers, because it's a standalone, so they could go back into rehab and actually see what that was all about and kind of get to know the characters a little better. And the friendship between Prue and Gloria. I elaborate on that as well in the back story scenes. So I just have a lot of fun with it. And to answer your question regarding format, no, I do not write one whole draft of one part. And I'm a pantser.
Yeah, us too.
Okay.
Pretty much.
Thank you.
Okay. The name of the book is The Name of the Millers, and I believe on your website as well. Is that correct?
Yes.
And
yes.
we'll be giving that web address here at the end of the show. And right now, we're going to have Mr. Polinelli, which has been chomping at whatever bit he has in his mouth, to ask his question, because I know what he wants to ask, and I'm actually curious about this as well. So go for it, Rich.
Well, you know, they say you never expect a Spanish Inquisition. It's got nothing on the Polinelli Inquisition. I'm just telling you right now. No, one of the many hats I wear at Tuscany Bay is book cover. I design a lot of our book covers, or I go out and find a cover that is out there that we can use. So I noticed, I was actually one of your followers on Twitter before Twitter threw me off. And to this day, I don't know why. But anyway, I started following you because of the book cover to the first book. Mm-hmm. Because it was an eye-catching book that just told you everything you know.
Right.
Right. So when we found out that you were going to be on, I go to your website and the book has a new cover.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering what was the thought process behind changing the book cover? Was it because it was going to be a series and you wanted the covers to start matching up, or was there another reason for the change?
Okay, so I did have a film option at the time that before I published Address the Color of the Sky, and it was very promising, very pretty much seemed like it was a done deal. And the film producer designed the cover. And on the cover, with original cover, the girl's not wearing a dress. She's holding it up against her body. And she's sitting on a donkey skin. It has the horses. It has a lot of the things that, and it's a beautiful cover.
It's perfect.
This story, Address the Color of the Sky, is a very serious story of childhood trauma, healing from trauma, addiction recovery. And it did not reflect that, for one problem. The second problem was that I couldn't run an ad on Amazon because she wasn't wearing the dress.
Right.
And my film option ran out, and I decided that I needed to cut ties with that cover. And I hired an Australian artist to do very simple, ethereal covers, which I think are beautiful. Mm-hmm. And they kind of just give a little bit more of the tone of what's going on in the story.
Right. And it does give you a sense of series, that there's going to be more in these two books with the two covers. I was just kind of wondering what triggered the change, because I know I had to do the same thing with one of mine. When I switched from traditional to I'm publishing my stuff by myself, thank you very much, I wanted a clean break.
Right.
And so I redid the covers.
I was kind of amazed, though, because, I mean, they have the most salacious covers on Amazon, with, like, sweaty men, six-pack. I mean, it's mind-blowing, but they just – and I thought my cover was gorgeous and very colorful and very beautiful, but they just, no matter what, they wouldn't budge on it, and that was that. And so I had to just not cover anymore.
If you want to know what Amazon will not budge on, just ask Richard and me.
Yeah.
we have had more problems with Amazon on submissions and printing and oh my God.
Yeah. I know an author who's a friend of mine who had a cover. It's sci-fi fantasy. Amazon threw a fit over it. And so he asked me what are they talking about? And I'm looking at it. I'm like, I have no idea what that looks. But then when the cover is on the cover. But you don't, unfortunately, with Amazon, you don't really have a whole lot of options to argue. Yeah. So you kind of have to do what you did and just, you know, change gears.
Yeah, and now it's fine. And I mean, I'm actually selling a lot more books. And, you know, you have to just feed the beast. It's unfortunate, but it's the way it goes. And I'm,
right. So
the minute I change the cover, they're just, you know, the book's selling a lot more. And I wanted to penetrate the market. I really did. Yeah. So I feel like it's a universal story.
And that is one thing for especially indie authors. And I look at our covers all the time in the same way. Maybe it is time to change that cover. Maybe go a different way with it and see, you know, don't be afraid to make those changes unless you're selling a million copies a day, and then leave it alone.
Maybe change your cover, maybe change your blurb. I mean, a lot of it fits your book somewhere. And you have just as much of an opportunity to own part of that market share as anyone else.
Right. That's absolutely correct.
I encourage writers to really get out there and try and learn how to run ads on Amazon, and it's worth it.
Right. I hate to change the subject, but I don't know if you're aware. I'm going to speak real quietly right now because there's somebody walking around behind you. They're in and out of a door back there. I don't know who that is.
He's a very suspicious looking character. We'll just say that.
Was it a cat or was it
the cops? I'm sure that's the boyfriend or whatever.
I don't know. What if it wasn't a cat?
He's back.
We'll go ahead and get Mickey out of the way. And then there's nothing to talk about tonight, which we never showed before. And we're going to start tonight. But right now, we're going to take a little break and we're going to listen to a little board from Creative Edge Publicity. Okay. You've written a book. How are you going to get your name out there? Well, the folks at Creative Edge Publicity will. That's their job. They aren't going to sell your book. They don't want to sell your book, but they will take your brand from the ground up so you are known in your genre and within the writer's community. They'll do this by using relationships with contacts they've made in TV, in radio, podcast, and publishing to get your name and your brand recognized. So why are you waiting? Contact Creative Edge Publicity at www.creative-edge.services or email Mickey Mickelson at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com. Creative Edge, your work and publicity. And we are back. It is now 6:42. And Richard, you had your hand up.
I just want to say, Jennifer, don't worry about the person wandering around the background. It's not the worst thing we've ever seen.
Oh, I know.
I did a podcast where my guest and I are talking and a cat starts walking behind her and I can see it. I'm like, okay, no big deal. But then her 70-year-old mom on all fours is crawling after the cat trying to, and I must have given it away because she turns around real quick trying to figure out what I'm looking at. So that is, whoever that is back there is not the strangest thing we've ever seen.
I'm really sorry about that.
For those who are going to be watching, we're recording this, right, Rich?
Oh, yeah.
For those of you that are going to be watching this, the video on this, in the next day or two, when you see Dylan, she's meeting a guy there.
This is the Peninsula Hotel, and I'm waiting for Alistair.
We're going to drop a dime to Jim about this and see if he knows.
She's going to catch Alistair on the rebound.
Although I actually liked George. I think I was kind of having this little thing going there with George.
I love it.
Isn't it? You guys so know I'm going to have fun in post-production this week. I'm just going to say it right
really
now.
And he's going to put something in there. He really is. Yeah, I can tell you right now. Okay, we're going to try a little segment tonight, and this is something we've never tried before. We're going to actually ask our guest writer and our onboard writers and our non-writer, well, she's a reader. What are you looking for when you write? What is it you want readers to go?
I want readers to escape their reality, to go on an adventure, to feel emotions, and to feel as though they don't want to put it down because they have to know what's going to happen next.
Okay. Rich?
Basically what I'm thinking is a reader has probably had a crappy day or a crappy week, and I've got a story to tell them that they can dive into and escape whatever it is that's weighing down on them. And at the end of the adventure, that they have enjoyed it so much that maybe it's made those things on the outside feel not so heavy anymore. So if I've entertained them and I've made them feel a little bit better about things, that's really all I want to accomplish.
Okay. Bobby Jean, as a reader, what are you looking for when you pick up a book? Now, no fair right for enjoyment. What are you looking for?
I'm investing my time to be swept away. And it could be any kind of genre, especially now that we've read so many different genres and genres that I never used to read that I am now finding that I really enjoy, like some horror. but I like books that have a satisfying ending. It doesn't always have to be a happy ending, but that I have followed it to conclusion and that when I put it down, I feel sated. And I feel like it was worth my time. And if I've bought it, it was worth my investment. I love a book that stays with me longer than it took me to read it. And I'm not really good with memory. I won't always remember the names of the characters. I do find, especially, but I really want it to stay with me. I want to have really gotten to know those characters or that situation so that I feel like it's become a part of me. I invested time, I invested money, and it's now part of what makes me who I am.
Right, right. Well, for myself, I like to, first and foremost, tell a good story. And I want you to both like the protagonist and be rooting for him the entire way through the book, but I also want you to like the antagonist. I think writing a good bad guy is as important or more so than writing a good guy. And so when the readers are reading, I want them to hook up with the bad guy and think, oh man, what is this guy going to do next? And turn the page. but like you, Jennifer, I want the book to go to completion. I want the story to flow to the point where the reader doesn't feel cheated that part of the story is left behind.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm kind of angry if no character had any kind of redemption, you just feel like I didn't like any of those people. I didn't like that situation. What was that writer thinking? Oh my gosh.
I know. I've got a couple.
How did this get published?
I've got a couple of those. I don't know. I do. Like the ghost. I couldn't find any redemption in him at all.
Yeah. I mean, and we've had a few like that I have found actually really challenging to get through because I just don't like any of it.
Isn't that really bad? But they have redeeming qualities.
Yes.
And it's like Lenny and Whitey. You know, they have redeeming qualities. They're really deeply buried, but they're there. You know? But guys like the Ghost and Bart Rutan and those guys, they have none. Mm-hmm. There's virtually no conscience whatsoever. They just don't care.
Well, you know who I use as a model for my bad guys is Al Capone. I mean, that guy was just bad to the bone. But at the same time, who was out there with the soup kitchens in Chicago and some of the other things he did that weren't as notorious.
Yeah, and buying out Ridley Field for the poor.
Right. Yes. So he had some, there was some good in him, but it was far outweighed by the evil. And that's kind of the bad guy character that I aim for. There's some things that he does good, but it doesn't excuse all this other stuff he's doing.
Right. Jennifer, in the 1 minute we have left, I need you to tell me, have you ever had writer's block? And if you did, very quickly, how did you get out of it?
I have never had it because I refuse to. I think it's like erectile dysfunction. Don't talk about it.
And then it doesn't. Don't tell.
We won't if you won't.
Okay. I got to write down that one, Jim.
Remember, we talk amongst ourselves.
We haven't had anybody answer quite like that before.
Did I just end the show with that?
Let's go out with a bang, guys.
Boy, of all the things that erectile dysfunction. Okay, anyway, continue.
It's just about as bad. I mean, honestly, I think there's always something that I can write. And if I get stuck on a scene, then I follow the small frame, very small, and I can't get overwhelmed by what's the big picture here. I have to just really keep my focus small, and then I become less overwhelmed. And then if I just say, okay, what's happening just right in this little thing, right? You know, and is it a critical situation for the story, or can I just move on and think of something else, you know? I think there's ways to get past it. So
okay, and Bobby Jean, what did John Sanford say about when he gets stuck?
Well, he can just put himself in a corner sometimes, and he just introduces a character with a gun.
That's it. He brings in a guy with a gun.
I love
just
it.
Bring in a guy with a gun. Okay. Pretty much gets him going.
Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us tonight. This 50 minutes flew by.
It's
been fun. It's been a great laugh. It's been a hoot. We really appreciate you spending the time with us. Now, real quickly, what is your web address?
Jennifer.com.
Skype address? Well, we know what that is. Never mind. We're not going to give that. You have a Facebook address?
Yeah, Jennifer Irwin Author is my Facebook address. At Jen Irwin Author is Twitter and Instagram. And all my social media links are on my website.
Perfect. Perfect. Thank you again for joining us. Next week, we have Mr. Freddie Cruz with us. He's a DJ and a writer from Houston, Texas. And he will be joining us on the Writer's Block next week. And Jen, stick around right after the show because we're going to talk about that book you were with, Chip Sibbin, you know. Okay. So for Bobby Jean Bell and Richard Polidelli, myself, Sam Hassan, the owner of Teletalk Radio, thank you so much, Sam. You make things so easy for us. And, of course, my wife, Jerry Christina, without the bookie, this show would be made possible. Thank you.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.